It's Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. There's mystery coming up in this hour, later on the last episode of the Candy Matson series, but right now a relatively rare broadcast of That Strong Guy, featuring Sheldon Leonard. This episode broadcast in the early 1950s, called The Temple of Horror.
Where'd you come from, stranger?
You're looking at a big man with iron gray hair. On his right hand, a six-shooter. And at his feet, a crumpled heap of what was once an old white-haired man and his wife.
Come in, stranger. Right in. Pity you call. The yard station.
So it's the way it looks.
Nothing is the way it looks, stranger!
Call me that strong guy. Yeah, Steve Strong. But right now you're lost. Lost in the heart of the backwoods country. You're trying to get to a fishing lodge. You've been driving for 2 hours since sunset. You've seen no sign of life along the road. And then you see it. One lonely light, 200 yards off the main road. So you park your car on this apology for a road and walk it to the house. You get to the door and raise the knocker. The door's off the latch, and it slides open under the weight of your hand. You find yourself looking at a temple of horrors. But in this temple, one of the wax dummies is moving. The other two look like they'll never move again.
Walker! Where'd you come from, stranger?
You're looking at a big man with iron gray hair, and in his right hand, a six-shooter. And at his feet, the crumpled heap of what was once an old white-haired man and his wife.
Come in, stranger. Right in. Pity you call for your sake.
So it's the way it looks.
Nothing is the way it looks, stranger. Nothing.
The room starts a crazy dance. Then a big blackness comes in and takes over. Then through the blackness comes the sweet smell of roses. And with the roses, a soft grayness gives way to an aching pain in the back of your head. And with the pain, you know it's time to open your eyes.
Never lost a patient yet.
She's the sweetest looking nurse you've ever seen. And right now, she's doing an operation on your wrists. An operation with hemp rope. And the knot she ties are no lover's knot.
You've been out some time, stranger.
I'm not sure I'm all back yet.
It'll come, stranger. But I don't know for how long it'll be.
So, why didn't it happen before?
Harry was interrupted. You're lucky.
But for how long?
Like I said, you're lucky.
If being trussed hands and feet like a Thanksgiving turkey's being lucky...
You're my Thanksgiving turkey, Steve. You're too good to waste.
So I owe you a life. But for how long do I owe it?
Well, Harry gets out of jail.
Now, wait a minute. Just, let me catch up on a few things, huh?
All right, Steve. You catch, I'll throw. Firstly, like this.
You're a brave girl with my hands tied.
Maybe I'll get to untie them one day.
Yeah? For what? All right, so the joke's on me, and I'm it. Now with a question, huh?
Go ahead, Steve.
All right. You read my wallet. Now, what's your name?
Stella. You like it?
In these circumstances, can I argue?
It could help if you don't.
Stella what?
Reaper.
Of?
Tanner Woods.
This is the place?
Everstick.
And Harry?
Behind bars.
What?
I told you.
Yeah, you did.
What's wrong?
Just the law out here. They always act this fast.
How long do you think you were out?
A couple hours.
4 days and 5 nights.
4 days and...
Like I said, you're lucky.
And like I said, for how long?
Till the trial's over.
They're trying him already.
Look, you're in the backwoods, Steve. We see a judge once in 2 years. So happens the courts were in session this last week, so they're rushing things through.
One for the books?
And one for Harry.
Well, how does that figure?
They can't find the bodies. Or a motive. Leastways, not one strong enough to hang him on.
You You mean he's got a good lawyer?
The best.
So Harry's got the money.
And that rules out one motive.
Yeah, it's still me.
Yeah. And there's still these rope handcuffs and leg irons. So I don't think you'll be giving evidence.
Yeah.
So he didn't die?
No, Benny, he didn't.
Sorry.
Plus one leg, Adela.
But you didn't want him to die, Benny.
Only after you told me I didn't.
It's the same thing, Benny.
Is it?
If he died, that means you killed him. That means you could hang Benny.
You tell and I'll do...
Benny, stop. He's not dead, so there's nothing to tell.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right, isn't it?
Yes, Benny.
Very right, Benny. But it's only just. You nearly pushed a hole in my head.
He doesn't know just how strong he really is.
Someone should tell him.
I don't need telling.
Maybe not. But you've got to have someone do your thinking for you.
I know I ain't right. That don't make it a crime.
No one's saying it is, are they?
All right, then.
Did Harry give you any message for me?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did. He said for you to bump this fella off. Said he's real explosive.
Looks like I recovered in time to write my own epitaph.
You're safe. So long as Harry's behind bars.
Why?
You know why.
Do I?
You could take me out of here, Steve. We could go places, do things. I got money. Harry's never been tied, but... He's no chicken no more, Steve. I want a man who's alive. A man I can live with and do things. And not a gray-haired old man who's too tied up with big business to find time for his wife.
He'd divorce you, too. That I cannot believe.
This is my divorce suit, Steve. You say the word, and I'm divorced. With this as my only lawyer.
You're looking at the smallest and deadliest of lawmen. A neat little pocket-sized 32. You're happy you're Steve Strong and not Harry Reefer. But then you take another look at your thoughts, and you figure you're both riding losing numbers. You figure there's only one way you can be called safe, and that's to get out of here.
I've got to go now, Steve. I'll see you tomorrow.
You know you're in no position to argue, so you don't answer. Take the kiss she gives you without giving one back. You figure that way you'll keep her interested, because you remember her saying, it's always the apple in the next orchard, it's the one you want to taste. Right now, you're making believe as an apple. You make a watermelon look small.
Keep an eye on him, Benny. Goodbye, Steve.
Yeah. Till tomorrow. You take stock of the mountain left in the room with you. It takes no ounce of gray matter to figure he's got a head that's all bone. And with a head like that, you figure you can con him into helping you out of this fix. The only way to get out of this fix is to untie the bands of rope around your wrists and feet. There's only two ways you can get them off. To cut them or burn them.
You want to smoke?
Lady Luck plays him for you. And she plays him good.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I light it.
No.
Huh?
It's, the superstition I've got, you see. I've got to light my own.
You light it with your hands like that? That I got to see.
Oh, just give me a book of matches and you'll see.
Here, take two books.
You show him how you do it, and he sits back in simple, big-kitted wonder and enjoys the pantomime. So you let him laugh. Right now, you're putting on a show for Benny. But later, when he rolls off to sleep, you'll stick the matches in the cracks between the floorboards and let them burn through the cords of rope that bind your wrists and feet. You've done your Chloe act and freed the bonds that bind you. And you're sitting in a car you borrowed from Harry Reefer's garage. You're driving through the night towards the town of Tanner Woods. The headlamps cut a tunnel of light through the blackness. And you start seeing familiar objects and signposts. And you remember when you saw them. You know you're approaching the Temple of Horror. The house you saw 5 nights ago. You don't know why you do it. But you swing the car into the long drive and pull up outside the house. Again, the door seems to draw you like a magnet, and you feel the prickle running up and down your spine. You try the handle, and the sensation sweeps into full flood, and your nerves do a cartwheel. The door is unlocked, and now you're in the Temple of Horror, the room where the nightmare began. And you hear it. Hand reaches for your gun, but it gropes on empty air, and you know all you can do is wait. And then you see it. Center of the room where it all began 4 nights ago. You're standing looking at a dark shape against the dim light of the stars behind the open doorway. And then the lights switch on.
What are you doing here?
Your whole body relaxes like a piece of warm jelly.
Who are you?
That could be my question. I got here first.
What do you want?
Hey, hold on, honey. I'm no crime boy. I'm Steve Strong, private detective.
But what are you doing here?
Hold on, honey. I told you who I am. Let's hear something from you, huh?
I'm Judy Kander. My grandparents were killed in this room last week.
Oh. Yours, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I came in just after it happened. I'm very sorry.
You saw who did it?
Yeah. I saw Harry Reefer with a gun in his hand.
You know him?
I know his wife. And a bump on my head knows his handyman a lot more.
Oh, even with your evidence, it's still hopeless until we find the bodies.
I still say my evidence is enough.
Not out here it isn't. Oh, you don't know these backwoods people. It's only your word against Harry Reefer's. And you're a stranger. As for Reefer, he's big time out here. So big, he's almost a legend. Owns half of Tanner Woods. His lawyers are banking on this. By 11 o'clock, Harry Reefer will be a free man.
Unless we find the bodies first. And I think I know someone who can be persuaded to help us.
Benny?
Yeah. If he's still where I left him. You go back to Reefer's place. This time, you borrowed a gun. A six-shooter that looks more like a cannon. Came out west with Grandpa Kander. You see the light on and the door open. And you swing the artillery to where you left Benny sleeping, with a bump on his head as added inducement. But the floorboard, a bare of rugs. And Benny.
Don't move, Strong.
But the air behind you is full of his voice.
Drop the gun, Strong. Drop it.
You're up early, Benny.
You hit me on the head, Strong. For that, I got a good mind.
Now, wait a minute, Benny. Let's keep this friendly. You hit me and I hit you. Now we're even. Let's keep it that way, huh?
You talk too much. I don't like guys who talk too much. They get me all mixed up.
Sure you don't, Benny. That's because they're always putting one over you. But Judy and me, well, we came back to help you.
Help me?
Didn't we, Judy?
Well, I...
Follow my lead. We've got to get his mind in a tangle. Tell him the chance.
How?
What are you two saying there?
Judy was saying I owe you nothing, that I shouldn't help you like I was going to.
Help me? What's she got against me?
That's what I say, Benny.
I'm as good as the best of them.
Sure, Benny. My guess is you're better.
Yeah?
How about he take Harry Reefer? Now, Harry, he's your boss. He gives out the orders, am I right?
Well, yeah, but I don't...
Ah, that's what I mean, Benny. He gives them. But who carries them out, huh?
Me. Benny Laker.
Yeah. See what I mean? You're the big-time guy around here. Not Reaper.
You reckon?
Sure, I reckon. Now, take where you hid the bodies.
Yeah?
Yeah. I bet Reaper didn't do anything about them. I bet he just gave the orders and left you to do the hard part. The hard part of making it tough for the police to find them.
Yeah, yeah, he did. But I fooled him. I sure fooled him.
Yeah, yeah, you sure did, Benny. It was a great joke, eh? Who'd have thought of looking in the tool shed?
Tool shed nothing. They got a better hiding place than that. No one would ever find them.
Yeah. He sure must have fooled the police. After all, they'd have to find the fresh dug earth. Yeah, that's easy.
There's fresh dug earth, all right, but it's hidden.
Yeah, and they'd leave mounds, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but I fooled them. One cop even wanted to play on top of them.
If he stood right on top, on top of the graves and didn't know it.
Yeah.
Steve, I can't stand this.
Hang on, honey, it's coming out.
Right on top he stood.
Yeah, what did he want to play?
He wanted to do some button practice. Can you beat that?
You mean like in golf?
Yeah, yeah. And he was right on top of the old couple.
No.
What's wrong with the girl?
She wanted to put some flowers on the graves. They were a folks, you know, Benny.
They was? Say, that's tough.
Yeah. She'd feel a lot better if she knew where to put the flowers.
It'd help if I showed her where?
It sure would, Benny. It takes a big heart to do what you're doing, Benny.
Okay. Oh, okay. The girl comes with me, but you stay here. And I only show her if she don't tell.
She'll promise.
Yes, I promise.
Good to it, Judy. You're doing great, kid.
I'll try.
You wait for Benny and Judy to come back, and you wait with a length of two before. Judy comes in first, and then Benny.
Oh, no! Steve, don't!
You look at Judy's eyes wide with terror. Then you see helpless defeat mixed in with the terror.
He didn't tell me. He changed his mind.
Yeah, so he wasn't so dumb.
Steve, what can we do?
It's morning already. Time's just... mine stopped 2-3 days ago.
It's after 6:30.
The trial's at 10.
Last night's paper said it'd be over by 11. Would have finished yesterday, but prosecution held out for the day.
So got less than 5 hours.
And Reefer's got 4 practice greens and fairways.
He must like golf.
He's the local club president.
That figures.
But where do we start?
You start by calling on Della Reaper. But she proves no help. So you leave her tied and gagged in a room while you and Judy cover every inch of the practice greens and fairways. And you're reaching the last of them when Judy calls you over.
Steve, over here. I think I found it.
You go over, and it's what you've been looking for. A thin line in the grass where a large square of turf has been cut out and rolled back and replaced again. And in the middle of the square is a small mound about 6 feet by 4.
We haven't got much time, Steve. It's almost 10:30 now.
You get back to the car. This won't take me long. You dig the shovel in. You don't stop throwing earth till you find what you're looking for. The evidence that'll hang Harry Reaper. You get back to the car fast and drive off. By breaking all speed regulations, you and Judy are outside the door of the courthouse by 2:58.
Can't go in there, mister. No, you lady.
He's big and as solid as the courthouse door behind him.
The judge is given sentence.
You mean he's been convicted?
I don't know. Judy came back 10 minutes ago.
Then we've got to get in. We've got evidence to hang Harry Reaper.
Hey, wait. Let go of my arm.
Sorry, fella, but I insist.
And this court is adjourned. stand will remain closed until the next session.
Hey, Your Honor, wait!
What's the meaning of this?
What was the verdict, Your Honor?
I don't see what that has to do.
I've got the evidence to hang Harry Reaper.
Order! Order! You realize what you're saying, young man?
I do. And Miss Canner can prove it with me.
We found the bodies of my grandparents in Mr. Reaper's private golf cart.
Order! 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 Sheriff! Sheriff! Hear the court! Hear the court!
And that's the whole story, Judge.
The jury found him not guilty.
But you can't let him go. He's a murderer.
It was the court's ruling.
Judge! Judge! You'll have to give me protection, Judge.
The jury found you not guilty, Reaper.
But that crowd out there. Listen to him. Listen to him, Judge. They'll kill me.
Yeah, Harry, sure they'll kill you. You should have thought of that before. Before you wanted the old couple's land.
Well, that was oil on the land. They didn't want any of it. I offered to buy it. They wouldn't sell. They wanted to keep their land for greed and cattle.
They had a right. It was their land, Reaper.
Oh, George, listen to me. They weren't living with the times.
Yeah, so you killed them.
Yes, I killed them. But in the old days...
It isn't the old days, Reaper.
Maybe not, but you're letting him go.
But you can't let me go, George. You can't let me go. Not with that crowd out there.
The court found you not guilty.
But, Judge, I'm telling you, I killed him.
Reaper, you confessed too late. You heard the jury's verdict. There's nothing more to be said. This case is closed until the prosecution requests a new trial by the laws of the state.
No. No, Judge. You can't. You can't do it.
Take him outside, Sheriff. This court is closed.
You can't leave me alone out there. Here, let go of my arm. You can't do this to me. You can't do it. You can't do it.
I'm a sentimental, a romantic guy, but I've got a lot of good friends in and out of the force, and I like to keep them. I also like to help keep law and order in the community. I'll be with you again, but for now, this is Steve Strong, or as I'm more often referred to, that strong guy, signing off.
That Strong Guy on Tuned 2 Yesterday, an episode from the early 1950s released for syndication. You're listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned 2 Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. Now on to the final broadcast of the Candy Matson series, which made its debut on NBC Radio on June 29, 1949, and was broadcast up until this last episode, featuring Natalie Masters as star under the direction of her husband, Monty Masters. This is Candy's Last Case from May 21st, 1951 on NBC.
Hello, Yukon 28209. Yes, this is Candy Matson.
Declare, Candy, this is a madder dash than the one made by Paul Revere. Look out for that man.
I see him, Rembrandt.
I know it, you know it, but does he? What's the reason for this wild scramble, girl?
I started to explain, Ducky. Look at that car up ahead about a block.
Yes, it's a police car.
That's right, and do you know who's driving? Lieutenant Ray Mallard, that's who. Whom?
Oh, Mallard's driving. There's no reason to get yourself for such a snit. I imagine lads driven before.
I'm not worried about the mechanical aspect of placing a car in motion and guiding it to a predetermined terminal. It's the reason behind it that bothers me.
That reason being what?
I don't know what the reason is, and that's the rub. For days, Mallard's been avoiding me like the plague. I call him on the phone, all I get are muffled sentences. Nothing makes sense. Last night, I waited in front of the Hall of Justice and followed him when he left.
And where did he lead you, dear? To a pool room or some such thing?
No. Pool room, I wouldn't have minded. I shoot a pretty good stick of snooker, you know.
That's beside the point, Candy. Come now, concentrate. Where did Mallard lead you?
To a small hotel on Ellis Street. He met a man in the lobby who was wearing dark glasses. They huddled in a corner and talked for a while. Then Mallard left. I didn't duck back fast enough, and Mallard saw me. Oh, brother, what a bawling out I got.
How strange.
With that, he got in his car and drove away like frantic.
That certainly doesn't sound like Mallard.
I called to apologize this morning. He wouldn't even talk to me. And now this. He never drives a squad car unless it's absolutely necessary.
Now you've got me curious. Something must be up.
You're darn tootin', and I want in on it.
Yes. Who does Mallard think he is keeping things from us like this?
Oh, he's stopping. I better hold it up right here.
He's getting out, Candy.
So I see. Look, he's waving up at the middle flat. Do you see anyone in the window up there, Ducky?
Yes, a man. I can't quite make out his features, though.
Yes, he's waving back.
Well, what's Mallard doing now?
Going up the stairs and in. How do you like that?
Rather delicious, isn't it? Oh, I squirm with intrigue.
Well, I squirm, too. Come on, Rembrandt, squirm out of the car. This is one time I don't mind doing a shadow job strictly for free.
From San Francisco, the National Broadcasting Company presents another yarn in the adventures of that attractive private eye, Candy Matson, Yukon 28209.
I knew there was something wrong 3 days before. Whenever I walk into Mallard's office in the Hall of Justice, where he lieutenants for the San Francisco homicide, and all I get out of the big guy is an ugh, something's foul in Dixie. You can play that in any key you like. And the ugh's kept up, mentally and verbally. Add that situation with Mallard's mysterious friend in the dark glasses, and you've got something. Especially when Lieutenant Boy stops off at an old flat, waves to a gent, the gent waves back, and Mallard goes inside. Now we're all tidy and up to date. We waited for about 20 minutes outside by my car. Two or three other people came and went. Finally, Mallard came out carrying a very small box in his hand. He put it inside his coat pocket. The bulge wouldn't show any more than usual. That's where he keeps his police gun. Then he got in his car and drove off. Rembrandt and I immediately went to work. Object? A social call on our unknown friend in the second floor window.
Hey, Candy, this is most mystifying.
That it is, Ducky. In all the years I've known Mallard, I've never seen him act like this before.
What are we up to now, Dove?
We're going to take a look at the guy Mallard went to see. Find out what he looks like. What sort of a racket he's in.
Supposing Mallard hears about it, won't you be even further into the doghouse?
Indubitably, faithful old friend. But that's the chance I'll have to take. Here we are. Little flat. This must be one of those babies built before the fire and the quake.
Yes, all 1906 conveniences, including a door knocker.
Well, give it a blast, Ducky.
As you say, this sort of place gives me a galloping case of depression.
Yeah, I know what you mean. All the ghosts of the past half century. Try it again, Rembrandt.
Any harder, and the building will slide off its foundations.
What is this? You could have heard that last knock out of the Farallone.
Maybe he didn't hear you.
Anyone in the neighborhood would have heard that, no? I'm going to try the door. Ah, voila. Except that it only moves about 2 inches.
Shove on it, dear.
My thoughts exactly. It gives a little. Help me, Rembrandt.
Very well.
Yeah. Hey, look. Under the door. That's blood.
I wouldn't call it ketchup.
Come on. Once again and harder.
Oh, my word.
That's the polite term. These guys are dead as they come. And look.
What, dear?
This is the Joe Mallard was talking to in the hotel lobby, even to the dark glasses.
I wonder what Mallard will say about this.
I was wondering the same thing. Come on, Rembrandt. I don't think I feel very well. That was an understatement. I felt worse than that. But I had to follow through now. Our next step took us down to the Hall of Justice for a little visit with Mallard. He was in. Just beat us back by about 10 minutes. He was still wearing the same scowl he had on the last time I'd spoken to him. You still mad at me, Mallard?
No, I'm mad at myself.
Did you stub your toe somewhere along the line, Minion? Is that it?
No, but I'm about to.
What do you mean by that, Footflash?
You'll find out. And it's all your fault, too.
You mean about last night, my following you?
No, that was a dirty trick, but I forgive you. It isn't that.
Then what is it?
Yeah, for goodness sake, stop sounding like a Threepenny Thrill book.
I'll say what I have to say in my own good time, and nobody can force me to do otherwise.
I've got news for you, Junior. The police can make you talk.
The police? What kind of triple talk is this?
We followed you out of that flat just now. We saw everything.
Oh, the underhanded... So, you know.
Yes, but why did you do it, Mallard?
Because I'm a fool. Just a plain fool, and I ought to have my head examined.
Also, the poor fellow you left out there. He needs his head examined, too.
He sure does. Got a hole in it about the size a .45 slug would make.
Wait a minute. What are you talking about?
Don't you know?
I thought I did. Now, I don't think so. Now, come on, quick. What's this hole in the head routine?
He's serious, Candy.
I really think he is.
Darn right, I'm serious. Come on, spill.
Okay. I'll tell it to you like you don't know. We followed you out there. You wave up to the second story. Man looks out the window and waves back.
Check.
You go inside. We wait 20 minutes further away. You come out with a small object in your hands. You put said object in the inside coat pocket.
Good report. Most efficient.
You drive off. We go up to pay a visit. The host wasn't willing. He'd been shot to death.
What? Oh, brother. And you thought I'd done it?
Well... Well, really, Mallard, I don't see anything to laugh about.
That's because you're not sitting where I am. Oh, Sister Susie, did you get your clues all fouled up? Let's get out of here. We got work to do.
My mental reflexes climbed on a merry-go-round and whirled gaily for several moments. I was really confused. I didn't have time to do much about it because Mallard whisked us back to the flat. An hour later, the joint had been carefully gone over, photographed, and the body of the poor guy removed to the coroner's office for an autopsy report. It didn't take long to find out that I was right. It had been a .45 that did the dirty work. Rembrandt had to leave, so I went back with Mallard to his office.
Still think I had something to do with this thing, Cupcake?
Oh, in my heart of hearts, no. But of course not. But jeepers, look at the facts, Mallard. You come out, we go up. The guy's stiff as a starched shirt. What would you think?
The same thing you thought.
Time element is what gets me. Not more than 3 minutes had elapsed between the time you left and the time we got up there.
I know. I can account for that, I think. But I'm not going to. As a matter of fact, there are several things I could account for, but I'm not going to.
Now who's doing the triple talk?
I am, deliberately. I'm going to tell you something, Candy. Listen carefully. You're a cute little old snoop. You snooped your way into the middle of this thing, and I'm going to toss it right into your lap and let you snoop your way out. And when you come up with the right answers, you're going to get the shock of your life.
I am he.
I think so. At least it was quite a shock to me.
You mean you've got the solution to this deal already?
Part of it.
You're much smarter, Footflat, than I thought you were.
I don't know who killed the guy, if that's what you mean.
I take it back, then. And now you really got me all topsy-turvy.
Oh, this is working out even better than I thought it would. Okay, Tootsie, you've got the ball. It's all yours. Take it from here.
You mean you actually want me to help you on this deal?
Sure. Who knows? You might come up with something. I'll beat it, will you? I gotta find me a killer.
I was so puzzled by then that I wanted to wrap the guy over his head. I fought off the impulse and left. If he gave me carte blanche on the killing, I was going to take advantage of it, if for no other reason than to prove I was right and Mallard wasn't the joker who did it. There's only one place to start, back at the flat where the guy had been done in. The cops had gone, so I did some question work. The landlady lived in the flat below. No, she didn't know the man. A gal named Jennifer Shirley had leased the middle flat for the past 5 years. I swung a deal with the landlady, got the key to same. Not the landlady, the flat, and moved in. I had a good night's sleep and waited all the next day. Nothing. The odd thing about the deal was the fact that the cops hadn't been back. They usually return for a double check. So the next night, I hit the sack again. About midnight, my dreams of a vine-covered cottage in the country with Mallard were rudely shattered by a sound. The sound of a key in the lock of the door. Oh, sorry, I frightened you, Jennifer. Take it easy. Everything will be okay.
Who are you?
I'm coming to that. Excuse me. You are Jennifer Shirley, aren't you?
That's right.
Excuse my nighting. If I'd have known you was coming, I'd have gone formal.
Just what is all this? And what are you doing in my flat?
Where have you been, Jennifer?
Seattle? Why?
Didn't you read the papers up that way?
I was too busy.
Know a man named Everett Stone?
Of course I do. He's a very good friend of mine. He was up from Los Angeles on business, and I let him use my flat. And now you're here. I don't understand this at all.
Look over there at your front door. Everett Stone was shot to death right on that spot.
Everett? Dead? I can't believe it.
I'm sorry. It's true. You can prove you were in Seattle, Jennifer.
Yes. Here. My plane ticket receipt and the stubs on my luggage. I just got in at the airport less than an hour ago.
Just for the record, where did you stay in Seattle?
At the Olympic Hotel.
We can prove that, too, can we?
Of course. Now, wait just a moment. The shock of all this slowed me down for a second or two. Just who are you and what are you doing here?
Simmer down, Jennifer. My name's Mattson, Candy Mattson. I'm a private investigator.
Oh, yes, I've heard of you.
I'm trying to find out who knocked off your friend Stone. You got any ideas?
Several.
So have I. One being this. Does everyone around here wear dark glasses? You've got a pair on, too. Same kind Everett Stone was wearing. Got something you want to tell, Jennifer?
Yes, I do. The dark glasses are standard equipment for the type of work we're in.
And what would that be?
We're gem dealers, precious stones. Whenever we have a valuable piece of property in our possession, we're required by bond to wear these dark glasses.
A disguise, so to speak?
That's right. When Everett arrived from Los Angeles, he had with him the Kate Hatteras diamond. You've heard of it?
Who hasn't? Worth about a half a million.
That's right. He was on his way to Seattle to show it to a prospective buyer. The first night here, Everett appeared on a television show to display the diamond. And as he left, he knew he was being followed. He called me and asked me if we could make a switch. Wanted to know if I'd take the diamond on up to Seattle and try to make the sale.
And he'd stay here, is that right?
Right.
Well, it was a good switch, except that Everett got himself knocked off for his trouble. Have you got the diamond with you?
Right here, in my purse. Look.
What a little beauty. And not so little as that.
No.
Oh, the most gorgeous thing I've ever seen. And you just carry it around in your purse like that?
Certainly. Who'd think to look in a woman's purse?
You've got a point. Lipstick, mascara, streetcar tokens, loose change, but not a $500,000 rock. Did Everett say what the man looked like, Jennifer, the one who was following?
Yes. He wrote a complete description for me.
Have you got it?
Also in my purse. Yes.
Yikes.
Miss Mattson, you're white as a sheet. What's wrong?
Plenty's wrong. This describes a certain Lieutenant Ray Mallard to a T. I slipped out of my nightie, slipped into my street clothes, slipped Jennifer a wet fish handshake, slipped out the door, slipped into my car, and slipped home to my penthouse on Telegraph Hill, and from there I kept right on slipping. That description was Mallard's beyond all doubt. What made it worse was the fact that Rembrandt and I had seen Mallard coming out of the flat with a small package that could have been a jewel box. I didn't sleep much that night, and that's for sure. In the morning, I put myself together as best I could and once again made the dismal journey down to the Hall of Justice and into Mallard's office.
How are you doing, Cupcake?
Not too well. I have some rather unpleasant news.
Such as like what?
Mallard Everett Stone was a gem broker.
Good for you. You've got clue number one.
You knew that?
Don't be ridiculous, Candy. That came out of McGuffey's reader.
Number two. He had the Cape Hatteras diamond with him when he arrived from Los Angeles.
Atta girl, you're getting warm.
He switched the rock to a gal named Jennifer Shirley. She took the diamond on up to Seattle because Everett thought he was being tailed.
Hey, you're getting better and better. What's next?
You mean none of this is news to you?
Old hat so far.
Well, maybe this won't be old hat. Everett wrote a description of the guy he thought was following him. He gave it to Jennifer. It's you right on the nose, Mallard boy.
What?
It's you. Including the little mole you have behind your right ear. You don't look so good, Mallard, dear. Don't you think you ought to tell me what it's all about?
Maybe I'd better. I can't for the life of me figure out. Wait a minute. Sure. Of course. You had me worried there for a minute, Cupcake.
Doggone, what is this, Mallard? I'm getting mad.
You'll find out.
Oh, I'll find out. But when will I find out?
Ooh-wee. Saved by the bell. Excuse me a minute, Detective Mattson.
Oh, sure.
Lieutenant Mallard, homicide.
Lieutenant, this is Sergeant O'Flaherty down on radio. Would you
Yeah, Florida.
There's been a dame killed out in that same flat, name of Jennifer Shirley.
It was then I knew that Mallard was really in the clear. The phone dropped out of his hands and he looked as if he'd been slugged with a belaying pin. Mallard had work to do, so I left. Only this time I didn't go back to the flat. I have tenderloin connections. So putting two and two together, I started making the rounds down around Turk Street. Turk, Ellis, Eddie, the whole section where the Easy Street boys hang out. I came up with nothing. Nothing until I stumbled into a little bar near Eddie Street on Leavenworth. I came face to face with an old acquaintance of mine. Name of Montgomery the Mole.
Rob, for crying in my beer and making it salty. Look what the high tide just washed in. Hiya, Candy.
Hiya, Montgomery.
I ain't seen you since the night you caught up with me former pal, Willie Cloud.
Oh, I'm sorry I had to do that, Montgomery.
Oh, I ain't. Hanging would be too good for that crump bum. A little second-story work ain't too far out of line. I can even swell a well-executed stick-up. But when it comes to kidnapping and murder, uh-uh. Asana's characters draw the line.
That's why I'm here, Montgomery.
Yeah?
There have been two killings in the last 4 days.
The grapevine must be slipping. I don't hear nothing about no rub-outs.
They've been kept quiet for a reason. Just what the reason is, I don't know. Have you heard about any of out-of-town icemen dropping in the last few days?
Not a one.
Now, look, here's a 20, Montgomery. That's all I've got. I'll send you 20 more first thing in the morning. Is your memory improving?
Ooh, just like I never lost it.
Well, is there a jewel boy in town?
Look right ahead of you up at the bar.
Yeah?
That's him. If he ain't a hot ice juggler, my name ain't Montgomery. Got in just about 4 days ago. Calls himself Finch.
Oh, Montgomery, I loves you. I'm moving over there. Do me a favor. Tip the bartender off. Tell him to keep my drinks well watered. It didn't take long. A guy from out of town gets lonesome. I was sitting at the bar no more than 3 minutes, and we were old friends. He kept the drinks coming, and by closing time, he really had a snootful. He offered to drive me home, and, oh, naturally, I accepted. We got out on the sidewalk, and suddenly he darted back into the tavern. When he returned, he was carrying something in a paper bag. We found his car and climbed in. Don't you think you ought to let me drive, Mr. Finch?
No.
Quite a few.
I can handle this little old car. I'm sort of a stranger here. You'll have to tell me which way to go.
Oh, sure. You go straight up Leavenworth here, and then you turn right on Bush. I'll direct you after that.
Okie doke.
Oh, you think real pretty. When did you say you got into town, Mr. Finch?
Oh, about 4 days ago. Let's see. Yeah, that's right.
What sort of business are you in?
Business? I'm in no business. Retired, sort of.
Oh.
Got lots of money. Get lots more, too. Ooh. Hey, look out for that bag.
Oh, I'm sorry. How clumsy of me. Why, it's a purse. Why, Mr. Finch?
Put it back. It's a present for my sister in Riverside.
Oh, how thoughtful. Turn left on Kearney Street, will you?
Sure.
Then when you get to Washington, turn right one block to Montgomery Street. It's right on the corner. Would you care to come up for a nightcap, Mr. Finch?
Hey, now, that sounds like a very good idea. Sure. Nightcap.
<Yeah. laughs> The corner of Washington and Montgomery is just half a block from Mallard's office in the Hall of Justice. With any luck, I could do a bloodless turnover to Lieutenant Boy. I reached down by my side, got my .32 out of my purse, and held it under my coat. We arrived at our destination, and Finch helped me get out of the car. There was only one pale light to illuminate the street, which was just what I wanted.
Ah, There you are.
You go ahead a little way, Mr. Pritchett. There seems to be something wrong with one of my heels.
Oh, sure.
Don't turn around, Mr. Finch. Not if you value your life. This is a gun I've got stuck in your back, and believe me, I know how to use it.
Say, what goes on here? I'm almost broke, if that's what you're
this
after.
This isn't a stick-up. See that door up the street in that big building? Just keep walking right on into that door. He started walking, and I hung back a few paces. I didn't want to lose this baby. He was too good. Because that purse he had in the paper bag was the one owned by Jennifer Shirley. I'd never be able to forget that purse. It contained the Cape Hatteras diamond. I marched him into Mallard's office, and Mallard was in. I gave him the full scoop, and in less than half an hour, we had one sad Finch behind locked bars with the promise of a full written confession of two killings and one diamond theft. I had never seen anything fall into place so easily. A few minutes after we returned to Mallard's office from putting Finch into his ungilded cage, there was a knock on Mallard's door.
Come in.
Is I Gumshoe? What on earth did you call me for at this hour of the night or morning?
Yeah, come on in, Rembrandt. This ought to be fun.
Oh, you too.
Yeah.
Why aren't you home getting your beauty rest?
Oh, we just wound up a couple of killings here, those of Everett Stones and Jennifer Shirley.
Well, bully for you. And I had nothing to do with it. Candy did it all. I left her strictly alone, and she came through like a trooper. There's only one little thing she's overlooked. When she comes up with that, she'll have solved her best and last case.
Last case? What are you talking about, Mallard?
Captain Mallard, this is Riley on the top deck.
Captain? What is this?
Yeah, Riley.
We got this Finch joker all booked and fingerprinted. He's in the Lysol dip now, then we'll tuck him into Betty Bye for the night.
Good.
We're changing ships now. Anything else you want from me?
No, Riley. You can knock off.
Fine, Captain. Oh, and all the boys up here send down congratulations.
Oh, thanks, Riley. See you tomorrow.
You? A captain?
Well, that's right.
Well, by Job, I think that's splendid. Congratulations, Minion.
Thanks, Rembrandt.
Oh, I'm getting dizzy again. He's a captain. And what's this stuff about my best and last case? Give out here, Mallard boy.
Doggone it, you're missing the most important clue in this whole case. Now, let's review it.
Go ahead, girl. I'm bursting me button.
Okay. I first get suspicious when you turn grumpy on me, Mallard.
That's when I was wrestling with myself over a decision.
That's right. Then you meet the Stone guy in a small hotel on Ella Street.
Well, we had business. That's where he wanted to meet me.
Then you go out to those flats. You wave, he waves, you go in. When you come out, you're carrying something. We go up, Stone is dead. Later, I meet Jennifer Shirley. She shows me the Cape Hatteras diamond. But she also shows me something else. A description written by Stone, a description fitting you exactly.
Here. Look what was in Jennifer's purse, along with the diamond.
What?
Another description. One that fits Finch. Everett Stone accidentally gave Jennifer the wrong slip of paper, the one that described me.
Oh, for Pete's sake. That sure had me worried, Mallard, dear.
Isn't there something else that worries you, Cupcake?
Yes, there is, darn it, but I can't put my finger on... Wait a minute. That's it. The package. The one you carried down the stairs from that flat.
At last, you finally did it, Candy. Here it is, right here. Open it, see for yourself.
Okay. Well, it's beautiful. What a lovely ring. Did you steal this from Everett Stone?
Sure did. The price he gave me made it a first-class deal. Why don't you try it on?
Ooh, I'd love to.
Oh, I don't think you're putting it on the right finger, Candy.
Which finger do you mean?
Third finger, left hand.
Oh, you don't mean that. Mallard, tell me.
I want you to be my wife, Candy, dear.
Say it again, will you, Mallard, dear? This is only another one of those fool dreams of mine, I'm sure.
It's not a dream, Cupcake. I mean it. More than I've ever meant anything in my life. Will you marry me, Candy?
You big idiot. You don't need the answer to that.
I wasn't asking you.
Oh, yes, I'll marry you. Captain, dear. Forever and ever.
You see now what I meant about this being your best and last case?
Oh, yes, but you're wrong. I have another and a bigger case coming up.
What's that, you little monkey?
Just trying to be an awfully good wife to you.
My word, I was wondering.
What, Rembrandt?
When you're married, how shall I address you?
Oh, that's easy. Just Mrs. Captain Mallard. I won't even have to change my initials.
For excitement and adventure and romance, just dial...
Candy Matt. I mean, Mallard. Mrs. Captain Ray. Yukon 282. Oh, that won't be my phone number. I'm so confused. I don't know what I'm saying.
Candy Matson on Tuned to Yesterday from the 21st of May, 1951 on NBC. And that closes this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVeunier. Thanks for tuning in.